What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll step behind the scenes at Croke Park as Coldplay continue their streak of 4 sold-out shows in Dublin. I'll chat to the team at Ticketmaster about the digital ticketing system and how it helps with man management on site. Derek Riley is going to pop in to talk about the latest news in the world of EVs and e-bikes. And as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so at any stage. Drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. But we're going to start with this. That is, of course, Coldplay, who took to the stage at Dublin's Croke Park on Thursday evening for the first time. They have since played Friday. They're on a night off now today, and they'll be back Sunday and Monday. I was lucky enough to be there. I have to say, it was one of the most incredible spectacle gigs I have been to. Coldplay were all the rage back when I was younger. I remember getting a rush of blood to the head on CD. My mum and dad bought it for me. I played it to death. They are one of those bands who have just endured 2 decades, and the energy and excitement around the stadium on Thursday afternoon was palpable. I was lucky enough to be allowed in a little bit earlier than everyone else. I was there at around 2:30 on Thursday afternoon while the crew were still putting the final touches on the stage. There were staff from Croke Park getting their security briefings. There was people from the promoter side. There were agents from Ticketmaster. There was a whole host of people there working away hours before the doors officially opened. And I went down to meet with the team at Ticketmaster. And I was there to talk to them about the digital tickets, because I'm sure you will have noticed, if you were at any of the big gigs over the last little while, tickets are now being issued digitally. So whether that is a barcode or the digital ticket that you download from the Ticketmaster app and save to your Google Wallet or your Apple Wallet, it is incredibly easy to download. You can also transfer your tickets to your friends. You can resell them. Everything is more streamlined in one place, making it easier for fans to get into the gigs. But I wanted to know how it all worked from a structural point of view, because I'm a nerd. This is Tech Talk. This is what we do. So I headed down and I met with the team from Ticketmaster.
So my name is David Cassidy. I'm the Director of Field Technology for Ticketmaster UK and Ireland. Our team here today is responsible for the access control system that's employed here in Croke Park. We've 140 scanners. So these are the devices that validate your ticket on your mobile device. So our team is here specifically to support the Croke Park staff and their Stiles operator with those hand scanners. Mm-hmm. So they're validating all of our digital tickets. And our system here is used by Event Control to monitor the flow of people coming into the stadium. Mm-hmm. We have a system in place here as well where it is dividing the stadium up into its different areas. So from acoustic standpoint, you have a ticket for that area, it will only allow you come in through those turnstiles. If you have a pitch standing ticket, like we saw where the pitch for this event is divided into 3 sections, A, B and C, C can only enter via the 15 turnstiles that are in place on the Cusick side. If they turn up at a Hogan stand side, they'll get rejected and won't be able to come in that area. Mm-hmm. So we work with the stadium to make sure that they understand what's happening with the tickets, and if there are issues, we can monitor them from our laptops or wherever we need to keep an eye on. So working through all of that with Croke Park.
You mentioned the staff on the gates and the turnstiles and so on as fans are walking in. The devices that they have, they're not big or clunky. It's the size of a mobile phone. Can you tell me a little bit about the capability and the functionality of those devices?
Yeah, so essentially, really, I mean, in the simplest form, it's like a smartphone. It's a ruggedized smart device. So it has the capability that we need for validating our SafeTix tickets. So that tap to enter functionality. So a bit like contactless payment, these devices have the capability of interacting with your mobile phone and validating that ticket. Likewise, if you turn up with a barcoded ticket, it has an imager built into it that will validate the same ticket. So that rotating entry token. So it has a dual functionality. It can do what we need it to do, both for our NFC or tap to enter functionality versus our barcode and rotating entry token. And the device itself has an application that is to Ticketmaster that we use, so we have it locked down on our platform, so nothing else can be added onto it, because at the end of the day it is like a smart device, so somebody could get onto Facebook if we don't lock it down, so we don't want that. In terms of the device itself, it's not overly complicated. It talks to our presence system, our access control TM1 entry. So again, I don't know if you want to get into the weeds of that.
Too nerdy.
I did think that.
But it basically talks to the bigger system.
Yes.
And when I scan my ticket to come into the gig this evening, that'll ping back to the master system to say ticket 12345 has come in through this gate.
Yeah.
And it's been validated.
Yeah, that's right, yes. Yeah, so that's exactly what it does. So the device itself is really a way of getting our phone to talk to the actual validation system. So it's just passing that information on to our TM1 entry system that green lights the ticket, sends it back and says to the person that's holding the scanner, it's a valid ticket, let them through.
I don't know if people like me are like me, because I always think about the mechanics and the logistics of big events like this. I'm fascinated by it. I just got to stick my head into the event controller's office there, and it was fascinating to see the screens and the operation that they have. But the data generated from the ticket scanners and from your system must be incredibly beneficial for them from a man management point of view.
Yeah, I suppose what they really look to is, as we were talking earlier on, is watching the throughput of what each scan is doing, and particularly in a bank of turnstiles, for example. Again, we go back over to the Cusick stand side, or more so on the pitch, and watching the throughput of that. So we're able to see what scan rates are coming in on a per minute basis or a 5 minute window. So they can track and see that, like, you know, at 20 minutes or an hour out, we're probably at about 500 scans a minute, and we then need to see, okay, well, in another hour, you know, we need to be up nearly at 1,000 scans per minute. So they can track that data on a dashboard and see how busy the entire stadium is at any one time.
We know that the promoters, MCD, pushed out an information, as they always do for big gigs, earlier in the week. And one thing that was specified on it was to know the route that you're coming in, so the colours. And that's not for the crack. That is part of, again, the man management. But one thing fans will notice on their tickets, the digital tickets, is that they are now colour-coded too.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So what we've ended up doing is where we have this ability now to do a ticket colourisation based on the route information given from Croke Park Stadium and the MCD themselves. So the routes here are broken out into four different colours, red, green, blue and yellow. And each one is indicating a specific route you need to come in to direct you to the right area, as opposed to saying come down Clonliffe Road when half the people may have not attended an event here before. So it's very important for us to be able to get that information on the tickets, and it helps coordinate between all of the other bodies, from the Gardaí to security on outer cordons, that they can do a very quick visual check on a ticket, see that it's yellow route, realize they're on the correct route, versus somebody who's come down a blue route and needs to be on red, and they can be easily identified and directed to the correct route to take.
Yeah, that was David Cassidy, Director of Technology Services at Ticketmaster UK and Ireland, speaking to me in Croke Park on Thursday. I also had the opportunity to catch up with Keith English, who is the MD of the Irish operation.
Across the summer, we have scanned close to 2.5 million tickets in for events in outdoor areas. People have arrived on site with their tickets already downloaded, ready to go. You're getting towards this position where you simply arrive at the event and you flow like a river straight in. So we're not creating barriers anymore. It's straightforward entry into the show that you want to go and see.
We heard earlier in the show a little bit about the logistics here on site at Croke Park for an event like Coldplay, where there are going to be thousands of people here. The last time we spoke, we said that you're more of a technology company. And I've really seen that today, to see the infrastructure that's in place, to see the level of data that's in place. It must be satisfying and gratifying for you to see your team's hard work and vision come to life at an event that makes thousands upon thousands of people so happy.
Oh, I mean, this is what we live and breathe for. This is why the team work in the industry in the first place. Mm-hmm. We have close to 50 people down here for this event. You talk to David and the engineering team, you can see they live and breathe this stuff. They are passionate and they're fiercely proud of the innovations that they brought in. That ticket colorization that David talked about, that was a project that he led. He's pushed very hard, he's worked directly with the stadium. Very proud, and rightly so, of it. Mm-hmm. And we will stand here and we will be happy when there's 80,000 Coldplay fans standing in watching the band. Mm-hmm. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, I was struck the last time we spoke about, you reiterated the point that you guys want to make things as seamless as possible for the fan. Do you think that people are now used to the way that the ticket buying and the ticket downloading and the ticket access process works? Because it has changed quite a bit in the last 5 or 10 years.
David showed you a report there which gave you the render count of how many people have actually validated their tickets and saved their wallets, and you can see the percentages are massive. So we know it's working. Mm-hmm. We can see it, we see the speed at which the people come in, our level of issues that we deal with in the gates are dramatically down year on year. It's just such a nicer experience. And the last time you and I talked, we were focusing on that fan experience of the ability to transfer your ticket, mm-hmm. the ability to resell your ticket. The platform that you saw today effectively underpins all that. That's what validates the ticket when you finally arrive at that show that you want to go and see. Mm.
The point of the ticket transfer, I've heard so many positive stories about it in the last little while, particularly for the big summer gigs of some of the most famous artists who were here. There was a huge demand, and life got in the way for some people, so they couldn't go. And rather than that ticket going on, you know, the black market or being sold for multiples of face value, the resale and then the transfer within the Ticketmaster infrastructure, I think, has taken a lot of the pain out of that process for people. Are you guys getting that sense that, you know, the fans appreciate it, but also that the artists do as well? Because some of the artists have been very outspoken about the resale of tickets previously.
I think we know for a fact that the fans like it, right? I mean, we have made it as simple and convenient as possible, and that's sort of our mission. Whether you're going to Bruce Springsteen or suddenly at the last minute, you know, your plans change. You know, why should somebody else not go in your place? These are really hot, exciting events. Mm-hmm. The artists want as many people as possible to be at their shows, so it resonates right across both sides.
Mm. So as I mentioned there, it's been an incredible summer. Have there been any standout moments? And I know every time I talk to you, there's always learnings from different events that you've worked on and been involved with. Are there any standouts from Summer 24?
2 weeks ago, on the Wednesday of the week, I went to the Dublin Horse Show. Mm-hmm. The following day, I was down at Electric Picnic for the early entries. The day after that, I was in Belfast at Liam Gallagher watching the team make sure that all happened in a great manner. The day after that, I was here at AC/DC, mm-hmm. and then back down to Electric Picnic. A single weekend, 240,000 people having their tickets validated and no issues, mm-hmm. of any notable description at all. So, you know, we've done the hard yards, and the team have put in absolutely stellar work, mm-hmm. to really make these events as accessible as possible for the fans. So, you know, a lot of pride on what they've delivered.
Yeah, that was Keith English, the MD of Ticketmaster in Ireland, speaking to me in Croke Park on Thursday ahead of the first of 4 Coldplay gigs in Croke Park in Dublin. It is an incredible gig. I know a lot of people scoffed about it. I was talking to Kieran Cuddihy about it the other day, and he wouldn't be the biggest Coldplay fan, I think is the way you'd phrase it. You don't need to be. It is a spectacle. It is an event, and it is hard to leave. I would say it's impossible to leave the Coldplay gig and not have had a good time. I enjoyed every single millisecond of it. There was a whole host of technology ingrained in every single part of the show. It was just insane to watch. So, for example, when you walk in and you have scanned your digital ticket within a second, and then you walk through, you are met by staff who then hand you a pair of kind of cardboard glasses. They kind of reminded me, do you remember years ago Rice Krispies gave away those paper glasses? One eye was green, one eye was red. It's like a different version of that. So you're given a pair of glasses and you're given a wristband. The wristbands, a lot of people will have seen them online. Taylor Swift also did something similar. But throughout the entire Coldplay show, these wristbands are programmed alongside the music. So they light up. It comes and goes in waves around the stadium. There's kind of like a Mexican wave effect with them. And the people that I was chatting to after the gig said that it made them feel that they were part of the show. It is such a simple thing. You put one on your wrist and you forget about it. And then as a fan, you're sitting in the stadium and you're looking around and you're seeing a light show alongside the music, but it's the fans who are the light show, if you know what I mean. It is just incredible. And with the glasses, when you put them on, you're prompted to put them on at certain parts during the show. And when you look around the stadium, there are, I don't know if they're floodlights, I don't know what the lighting lingo is, but there's a particular type of light. And when you put the glasses on, you look around you, what seems to be a normal light to the naked eye suddenly is producing hearts. And again, so simple, but such a lovely touch. And I was just blown away by every single element of it. I don't know if you can tell, but I had a great time. And I was very, very lucky to be there. I know they are sold out, but if you're going on Sunday or Monday, please enjoy every single second of it and put your phone down and just enjoy it. Embrace it. I know there was a lot of talk this week about phones at gigs. Shane Coleman wasn't too pleased about it with people taking their phones out on Grafton Street. Look, I get that you want to take your photographs and your videos and all the rest, but just do, like, there were certain songs where I just put the phone away. And I enjoyed it and I embraced it. And I'm very glad that I did. But if you were there on Thursday or Friday, let me know what you thought of it. Did you enjoy it? You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. When we come back in a few minutes' time, Derek Riley is going to join me with the latest news and reviews from the world of EVs. But I have to play a bit more Coldplay. It is just, it makes my heart so happy now, I have to say. This was one of my favourite tracks from the gig on Thursday night. This is Adventure of a Lifetime.
With Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. I'm still bopping away to Coldplay. I have to say, I absolutely caught the Coldplay bug. I had such a good time. Before the break, I was telling you about some of the tech, but I want to just touch upon briefly some of the environmental efforts that have been made to make the show a little bit greener. Coldplay said a few years ago that they were going to put pause on their touring activity until they could figure out a greener way to do it. Chris Martin has been very outspoken on environmental issues for many years now, but they've kind of put their money where their mouth is. He addressed this with the crowd on Thursday night when I was there. I'm sure he's done it other nights as well. But it was really interesting to see the reaction of the crowd. There was no one rolling their eyes or kind of scoffing at it. People seemed to really appreciate it. And the way Chris Martin was articulating it made it clear that the fans were part of the solution here as well. So there's been a report that was commissioned and it shows that the current Coldplay tour, as of June of this year, has produced 47% less CO2 emissions than their previous stadium tour in 2016-2017. Now, that report was independently validated by a professor at MIT. But some of the ways they've done it, so firstly, 66% of all tour waste has been diverted from landfills. 5 million trees have been planted, which is one for every concert goer. Power for the show's production, so that's for the lights, the audio and the lasers, is provided from an electric battery system that uses 100% renewable energy. Like, is that not really cool? I was saying to Pat the other day that at the gig before the support acts came on, there were people on trampolines. There were two trampolines on the pitch, and then there were these bikes. And I was kind of looking down and I was seeing people jumping on the trampolines and cycling the bikes. And then I looked up at the big screens and it turns out that those fans were generating renewable energy. And there was a bit of a competition and a bit of crack trying to see which side of the stadium could generate more and all the rest. But again, it gets the fans involved and it gets them thinking about renewable energy. And it's like, it's not the most exciting topic in the world, but again, getting people aware of these issues and engaged in these issues is pretty cool. Another question that cropped up, somebody in the office asked me the other day, you know, the wristbands that I was mentioning before the break, what happens to those? So they are plant-based LED wristbands and an average of 86% of those have been returned after the show. So when you're walking out of the stadium, you're prompted to take the wristband off and throw it into a bin so that it can be reused, not an actual bin. There are particular boxes, for want of a better phrase, that you put the reusable watches in and they can then be used for another gig. But 86% of people have been returning them, which is class. So again, these little efforts do go a long way. And I do think it is something to acknowledge. And it's a good standard for a band like Coldplay to set for others. But yeah, I was just interested and impressed. And that does lead me very nicely on to Derek Riley of Nevo.ie. Derek, how are you?
I'm very good, Jess.
I was talking there about the initiatives that Coldplay have taken to try and reduce their impact on the environment. And it's great to see bands like that taking those initiatives, I think. But of course, everyone can do it by moving to an EV, because as we've talked about many times, there are environmental benefits as well as for your pocket. What have you been driving recently?
I've been some nice work hard here this week. The Renault Scenic, a phenomenal car, Google built in. So there is a great technical aspect to it. It's got a solar bay, which means a sunroof to everybody else. But it can frost and unfrost by just talking to the car. And it also has a ingenious armrest where it turns into a kind of a tablet holder. So brands are really taking on technology, number one, but also thinking about how passengers and drivers are using technology. And when you look at this armrest, you go, oh God, that's really simple, because it's a slot just to stick your phone or a tablet in. And when you think about how people are using the rear seat, kids, et cetera, that's what it's all about now. And you'd wonder why other brands just aren't putting in PowerPoints and putting in these holders for phones and tablets, because it's what people actually want.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see brands that do take listener feedback, or not listener, user feedback on board, because you all, like, you know yourself, it's the same within hotel rooms. Like, you want somewhere to hang your coat, to put your suitcase and all the rest. And it's the same in the car. If you're a driver, if you're a passenger, you go to do the same sort of things all the time. So it's good to see that they are taking that feedback on board, because how we use cars and how often we travel and all the rest, it has changed in the last 20 years. So it's about time that they kind of adapted, right?
And I'll segue there with your hotel stuff, which is totally out of what we don't talk about normally. But I was in a hotel recently in Bristol, and via the app of the hotel group, I was able to use my phone as my hotel key. And I went, that's really smart, because you're not thinking about, where did I leave the key? Did I leave the key beside the phone and it's going to wipe it and all those kind of stuff? I unlocked the door with my phone. And I was like, this is really cool. This is the nerd coming out to me now, Jess.
Yeah, no, I love stuff like that. It makes me so happy and it's just so clever. I wanted, the thing that sort of made me reach out to you this week, not that you're not welcome all the time, but I mentioned there the bikes that were being used on site at the Coldplay gig to produce renewable energy. And it got me thinking a little bit more about, like, a lot of the micromobility solutions, the conversations tend to veer towards the e-scooters. But e-bikes, there's an awful lot going on in that space as well.
Yeah, e-bikes, e-cargo bikes are getting more and more prevalent. So instead of somebody having a second car that may have, or even their first car, they may choose an e-cargo bike, and it's multi-purpose. I need to go get the shopping, I'll put my shopping bags, and there's different formats. You can have a bucket in the front, you can have what's called a tail at the back, and you can carry goods, you can carry people, kids and stuff like that. There can be rain covers over them. And so the utilization of electrified bicycles, and so you're not having to rely on manual labor, sweat and exhaustion and all the rest of it, and energy, whereas the battery would just give you that little nudge to be able to get you up that hill, to be able to get you longer distances. And what we're seeing is more and more people are using them as commuter bikes. They may be living 10, 15 kilometers outside of where their place to work. And rather than driving in traffic, and we've got the new traffic plan in Dublin this week, et cetera, making it easier for bikes to get around and making it easier for the cyclist to utilize that bike by putting a battery power into it. So yeah, lots of innovation in that space and lots of different types of e-bikes that people can choose from.
The one thing I'm curious about with e-bikes is obviously there's a battery in it, right? What happens, like, is it usable as a bike without the battery? If the battery dies, is there an awful lot of extra weight that you have to kind of pedal with you, or is it still usable just as a standard bike?
Great question. And so, yeah, you absolutely, you can use it. It is a bit heavier because there is that battery in it, but then you have a couple of different types of e-bikes. So sometimes they're built into the frame and so you can't remove them. Some of the more expensive batteries are able to be removed. So if the battery is dead, you could leave it at home or leave it in the office and you're cycling home without that dead weight, but then you won't have a battery to charge when you get home. And also if you're parking your bike in a communal parking space in the basement of your apartment or at work, you can bring that battery up to your apartment or to your office and charge just the battery. You're not having to lug the whole thing up or down the stairs or in the elevator or whatever it may be. So yeah, the battery, you can still use it as a bike. Absolutely. It doesn't lock up. It's a small bit heavier. It's actually not that bad. And no problem at all. It still work as a regular bike. The battery and the electric motor there are just really there to assist you in a legal sense. You shouldn't have an e-bike on Irish roads with what's called a throttle. So you pull a trigger or you pull a button or you twist the handlebar and it goes without any pedaling. That's still not legal. What we're looking at here is an assisted bike or a pedelec, as they call it, technical terms.
Okay. When we're talking about our EVs, we always talk about the range and all the rest. What's the language and the lingo when it comes to those, the bikes that are legal? Like, you know, is it something that, you know, anyone will do? Are there some that are better than others? What's the spec sheet that you should be checking out if you're thinking of getting one?
Yeah, so it'll give you, because there's different levels of assistance. So level one would be no assistance, you're cycling on your own power, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, depending on the manufacturer, depending on the model. And they will tell you with level three, Jess, you will get 60 kilometers worth of assisted cycling. If you go up to level five, which would mean less work for Jess, more work for the battery, that might jump down to 45 kilometers worth of range. So very much like an EV, it's about how you're utilizing it, how you're doing it. And some journeys you may not need the same level of assistance all the way along. You might have a hill halfway up the journey that you need a bit extra help. So you can increase the throttle, you can increase the power that the battery powered bike is giving you. And so you'll be surprised. When you hear these commuters, people saying, oh, I live 25 kilometers from my office, but I cycle into work. And you're like, God, cycle into work 25 kilometers. But because they've got that assisted, they're not arriving in all hot and sweaty and having to have a shower before the start of the day of work. They're still getting physical activity. They're still getting good fresh air out and about. And sometimes people say, oh, an e-bike is kind of cheating. But the studies have shown that people who cycle even e-bikes are healthier than those that don't cycle at all. So some people just need that extra. And it could be that you're getting a bit older. It could be that you might have a physical impairment where you need that extra assistance. So there's lots of different use cases as why people would go electric. But to your question, yes, they are rated on watt hour. So the size of the battery, 500 watt hour, 600 watt hour. Can you get a second battery to boost that up to extend the range? But all manufacturers should give you, this is what we estimate the assisted range will be, 60, 80, 100 kilometers, 120 kilometers if you use the lowest one. So yeah, the lingo is very easy. And there's some really great e-bike stores out there that the people that are working in them know exactly what the products and services are of those e-bikes and the supports that are there for it.
This could be the stupid question of the segment because there always is one, but you mentioned there that some of the manufacturers will allow you to take the battery off the bike. If you're storing, like say if you are in an apartment complex or maybe your office has a bike rack outside but it's very exposed, should you be taking the battery off the bike and bringing it inside with you, or like do you have to get a cover or anything like that?
No, it's all sealed, so it's weatherproof, so dust and moisture, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no problem there. Sometimes the batteries are a bit more exposed. I'd always be a fan of, if anything can be removed, I always take it away, because if I can remove it easily, some nefarious actor out there could potentially remove it easily as well. So if it can be removed, whether it's a quick release saddle or if it's quick release handlebars, anything like that, I just always take it with me, because you know what? If I can remove it, there's just people out there that are messers. And if it is a public space and a public realm, I'd always say yes. But some of the newer e-bikes are really sleek and the battery's built into the frame and you wouldn't even realize it's an actual e-bike. But just make sure you're securing it correctly. Good chain, good U-lock, all that kind of stuff. But that's for a different segment.
Yeah. We spoke before around how, you know, certain businesses are starting to use electric vehicles as part of their cargo and their fleet and all the rest. And that's great to see. One of the questions that we addressed at the time was just the charging facilities for maybe bigger vehicles. And that is being addressed bit by bit.
Yeah, well, last week we had SSE Airtricity opening up Ireland's first ever drive-through, not easy for me to say, drive-through charging bays in Mullingar. And so what that means, if you've got a longer vehicle, so maybe an electric bus or an electric truck or something, maybe with a trailer on it, that you don't have to try and reverse this into an awkward car-shaped space, even though you're driving something different or longer or larger or bigger. And I think that's starting to show that, you know what, I know it's Ireland's first. There are not too many electric trucks out there, but this afternoon I'm heading off to a large logistics company here just outside of Dublin that are after spending €22 million on their truck fleet to make it go electric. So organizations are definitely starting to think about, we're going to electrify our fleet. We want to be zero emissions by 2030 or whatever the time frame may be. But when these vehicles are out and about on the road, it's fine having charging infrastructure at your depot or your office. But if you're on a more of a nationwide catchment area, the likes of this SSE hub that they're after launching in Mullingar with these drive-through hubs and charging bays, a bit more commonplace in Europe. Still not everywhere, but it's great to see the first of them in Ireland. Mullingar, centre of the country, number one. But number two, they have three more in the works as well. One in Meath and two more in Dublin. So these are going to start rolling out. And it won't just be SSE Airtricity, it'll be other brands as well. So it was great to see that opening. And when you're a company and you're thinking about the routes that you're going to be driving on or you're currently driving on and you want to go electric, to see that public infrastructure being put in place is exactly what people want.
And I remember a few years ago you did a piece with us about, you know, apps and different tools to help you identify where these charges are and all the rest. Are these being updated the entire time? Like, will people have to still do the legwork beforehand and obviously plan your route, etc., as you always say? But like, this is going to be like, is it in Google Maps, for example?
Exactly. So it is in Google Maps. It is in all the app sharing or the charger sharing apps. A lot of these charger sharing apps are actually crowdsourced. So once a charging station comes up, a lot of the community will say, oh, there's a new charger in that location or at that supermarket. This is the price. This is the availability. This is the power output. So there's a great community there. And what I like about SSE or the Hub and others now that are starting to be rolled out, it's also tap to pay. So you just have to use your card, off you go, whether it's a company card or so. You don't even have to do an app. But yeah, Google have it already updated there. And if you put it into your sat-nav, you can see it's actually there, just outside Mullingar on the N4. So that commuter route, that trunk road is starting to be serviced. People are saying to me, oh, why isn't it on the Dublin Cork Road or the Dublin Galway Road? Of course, these things are in the works and they have to start somewhere. So the fact that that Mullingar route is on my way home to Belmullet, I'm delighted.
Yeah, look, one thing that crops up sometimes is that it's the opposite side of the argument of, sure, is there the demand for this kind of stuff? But I'm sure you guys have stats and, you know, the research, and obviously the people investing in this infrastructure have stats and research to show that there is demand for it.
Yeah, definitely a chicken and egg situation. Organisations need to see that there's public charging in place before they may change their fleet. People that sell chargers and put in charging hubs need to say, you know what? We need to reach a critical mass of actual vehicles on the road before we're willing to put the investment into it. But there's very much, the charging companies are putting that investment in. And it's a long payback time on that return on investment for somebody to put in the amount of infrastructure, hardware, grid connection, etc. And then to say, you know what, we're going to be charging you 50 cents a kilowatt or 60 or 70 cents a kilowatt. and people go, oh God, you know, it's 2 cents more expensive. We need to think about that overall hardware and the cost of these huge charging hubs. Like, there's 10 bays in Mullingar, and that by no means is the biggest in the country, and they're starting to be rolled out more and more, these hubs. But chicken and egg situation, as I say, every day there's more chargers coming online, but every day there's less and less petrol stations actually out there, because they're starting to close down, because there is a critical mass of petrol and diesel vehicles out there, but they're in the ascendance, and there's more and more on the road every single day, so more and more chargers are required. So it is definitely a growing space.
Yeah, awesome stuff. You mentioned it last time you were on the show. There is another, your big flashy events are coming up. If people want to go along and all the rest, I know we're a while away yet, but will you be talking through from a business point of view as well? So if business leaders are listening to this now and they're contemplating doing the move, you know, their fleet from petrol and diesel to electric vehicles, will there be people on site on the day who can explain the logistics and what they need to consider and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to have a business aspect to it as well. There are going to be 2 stages at the show, November the 10th. You can get your free tickets over on nevo.ie, but there will be talks on the day, but also you'll have stands and experts there that you can go up to and say, SSE will be there for an example, and they'll be able to talk about what their future plans are. So if you're a business, you can go up and talk to the manufacturers for the vehicles. So we're going to have commercial vehicles on show there, so you can find out what vehicles are there or coming down the line. You can understand about that public charging network. You can also potentially talk to people who are installed chargers in your places of work or your depots or your offices. So we're going to cover that full gambit, so you can walk out of the show at the end of the day to say, I have a lot more information now that I can take away, and I understand better how I'm going to electrify my fleet. And so it's all about that, everybody learning from. You shouldn't be thinking, oh my goodness, I have to think about this whole change of how we're going to run our business fleet. With the show, we'll help you, give you that information.
Brilliant stuff. Well, that is coming up on November 10th. We will, of course, be talking before then, but it's just good to put that date in your diary now. Derek Riley of Nevo.ie, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Surrounded by losers, misfits and boozers, hanging by your fingernails. You made one mistake, you got burned at the stake. You're finished, you're foolish, you failed. There's always a hope on this slippery slope. Somewhere a ghost of a chance to get back in the game and burn up your shame and dance with the big boys again.
Yeah, that is the iconic voice of Mick Jagger. And if you don't know what theme tune that is, you are absolutely missing out. That is the theme song for Slow Horses on Apple TV. If you haven't watched it, get on it. Season 4 is finally coming out on September 4th. So that is just in a few days' time. So on Wednesday, you can sit down and enjoy the wonderful world of one of my favourite casts of a TV show in quite some time. If you haven't seen the first 3 series, please binge it over the next few days. I guarantee that you will absolutely love it. It stars Gary Oldman, as well as a whole host of other excellent actors. And it's pure entertainment. It's a little bit crimey. It's a little bit spy-y. It's a little bit funny. It just ticks so many boxes, and it is a purely bingeable show that will have you on the edge of your seat. But as I said, season 4 is kicking off on September 4th. Mark in your diaries. I cannot wait. Genuinely, I cannot wait. But that is my recommendation for the week. Binge watch everything and be ready to go. We have quite a few questions to get through. As ever, if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so. techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. Now, let's have a look and see who has been in touch. Right, our first email this week is from Louise, who says, "Hi, Jess. My son is going into sixth year and needs a new laptop. I'm wondering if I'm better off buying a proper laptop, in quotes, rather than a Chromebook, because it could work for him next year too. Any thoughts?" Okay, Louise, this is a bit of a tricky one to answer at this moment, because I don't know what your son is going to do in college. And as I mentioned on the Pat Kenny Show a little while ago, when it comes to buying a laptop for college, you do need to find out, firstly, if there's a particular piece of software that's required. So for architecture, for example, you might need to have a certain piece of software that will only run on certain devices or will require certain spec. So you do kind of need to have an idea of what your son would be interested in. Your best bet might be to get a laptop rather than a Chromebook, because a Chromebook is great for, say, Google Docs or for anything that's sort of online streaming, emails, all the rest. But it's no good to you if you need to install certain types of software. When it comes to a laptop, there are so many good laptops out there at the moment, in terms of the offers you can get, but also in terms of the power you can get. I said to Pat recently enough that the key things to consider for me when it comes to a laptop, if you're looking to invest and if you're looking for it to stand the test of time, the RAM for me is the most important thing. So very often it'll be RAM or memory on the little spec sheet within the shops or online. You ideally wouldn't buy anything with less than 8 gigs of RAM. You can get ones now that have 16 gigs of RAM. That basically means that the more RAM you have, the more powerful the machine will be and the better able it will be to deal with heavy duty software. So I would look at brands like Acer, HP and Lenovo. Or if your son is already sort of familiar or maybe into the Apple ecosystem, you could get a Mac, but they are quite expensive. It's worth noting that there is an Apple education portal where students can avail of certain discounts, which could be worth looking at. But what I would do is just try and see, like, I know it's a very difficult conversation to have, but if your son knows that he's, you know, potentially going to do something like architecture or something that would have a very clear necessity for heavy duty software, maybe go for as high a spec laptop as you can. I do think, although Chromebooks are great and they do serve a purpose in the world of portable computers, it may not be your best bet in terms of what your son wants to do. So that's a long-winded way of saying I don't know, but there are plenty of good laptops out there. Again, look at the RAM. If your son, like I did an arts degree, for example, a Chromebook would be ideal for me for my arts degree. So it's a tricky one to answer emphatically without knowing the course that he'll hopefully do next year. But I hope that is of some help to you. Next up, we have an email here from Claire who says, "Hi Jess, I was going through a bit of a clean of our attic and I have found boxes of old devices, DVD players, VHS players and thousands of cables. What is the best way to get rid of all of this? Please help." Okay, firstly, well done on doing a big clear out. I'm trying to do one at the moment and it is utterly painful. So you can bring the bits and pieces to your local Wii recycling plant. You should be able to find details online handy enough, depending on where in the country you are. You can simply go to weeireland.ie. So it's W3EsIreland.ie, and that'll give you a full breakdown of what you can recycle and where you can recycle. I would highly recommend it. I mentioned recently, just moved into our new house and we found an old DVD player. There was also some speakers. There was a whole host of stuff and we took it to the recycling centre and it's free to do as well. So I do hope that helps. I would highly recommend getting rid of as much as possible because it's not ideal, do you know? Speaking of doing a clear out, by the way, I mentioned this as my tech rec on the hard shoulder a few weeks ago. If you're not already on Depop, get on Depop. When we were moving, I went through all of my clothes, obviously enough, and it was a pain in the face. But I started selling clothes on Depop and I started buying clothes on Depop. And it is so amazing as a platform. So you just sign up, you take photographs, put a description of the clothes that you're looking to sell, and then you just wait. And only when items are sold does Depop make money. So they take a cut of it, basically. But if you're selling something for 20 or 30 quid, they'll take a few euro off you. You arrange the postage, the shipping of the item, the garment, whatever it might be. And then you can make yourself some extra money. It is absolutely fantastic. I haven't had a single issue with it. I've also bought a few bits on it. I bought stuff for myself, but also for my nephew. And again, it's just been seamless. It's a very nice platform as well. People are really open to questions and conversations and updating you on when things have been shipped. So yeah, if you are doing that big clear out, bring your electric stuff to the Wee Recycling Centre. And for clothes, for shoes, for bags, for anything like that, get on Depop. It just makes pure sense. Right, that is it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's News Talk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.